Right now, sitting on GitHub, there is a piece of open source software that can, well, basically completely bypass the million-dollar neuroscience laboratory.
Yeah, it really
It's
does.
called the PyE server. And today, we are unpacking how this single repository takes just a standard, like, $30 Raspberry Pi and a custom shield and turns them into a real-time brain-computer interface.
Right on your desk.
Exactly. Capable of streaming 8 or 16 channels of live electroencephalogram data. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because the fact that you can pull down a repo today and suddenly have a system integrating raw cortical voltage with your local network architecture, I mean, it completely redefines hardware hacking.
It really is wild. What's fascinating here is that this project strips away the proprietary lock-in that has, traditionally defined neurotechnology.
Because it used to be so walled off, right?
Oh, entirely.
Yeah.
Historically, if you wanted to capture brainwaves at 250 hertz, which is 250 samples per second, per channel, you were buying into closed ecosystems. You needed specialized medical hardware running completely proprietary binaries. But PyEG server, it just flips that architecture entirely. It exposes this high-quality biological data using modern, accessible web standards, which completely democratizes the developer stack.
Which is huge. And for you listening right now, whether you are a systems developer, mapping out a weekend project, or just someone tracking the convergence of human biology and embedded systems, this deep dive is going to look at the exact mechanics of how that boundary is
Yeah,
dissolving.
it's a dissolving boundary for sure.
But to actually understand the application, like the actual brain-controlled software, we have to start with the data pipeline. Like, how do we get raw microvolts from the scalp into a usable data structure?
Right, the plumbing of it all.
Exactly. And the documentation outlines an installation process that honestly surprised me. Because I was expecting, I don't know, to compile custom kernel modules or
Right,
something.
sure. Usually it's a nightmare.
But it's not. It's a one-line install. You literally just curl a script from the repo and pipe it directly into Bash. It's like getting a plug-and-play starter kit for your brain, like setting up a smart home device or something.
Yeah, the streamlined setup is definitely a strategic choice to reduce friction. But the real architectural shift is how it broadcasts that data once the daemon is actually running.
Right.
Because the server opens a WebSocket on port 1616 and fires the 250 hertz brainwave data across your local network as plain JSON frames.
Plain JSON, which is just, I mean, using plain JSON over WebSockets rather than a highly optimized proprietary medical binary like EDF plus CargBay, that is a massive paradigm
It
shift.
really is. It completely flattens the developer stack.
Because you don't need a massive C++ SDK, do you?
Exactly. You don't need a specific proprietary parser.
But wait, let me ask you this, because there is a trade-off with JSON at 250 frames per second, right? It's network overhead.
Oh, for sure.
A raw binary stream is incredibly lightweight, whereas JSON has all this structural bloat. So why output the data as plain JSON over WebSockets instead of some highly secure, complex, proprietary format that medical devices usually use? Like, why absorb that overhead for high-frequency biological data?
Well, you absorb the overhead to achieve absolute language agnosticism.
Oh, okay.
Think about it. If the developers used a proprietary binary protocol, they would have to maintain separate software development kits for like Python, JavaScript, Rust, Go.
Think small updated.
Exactly. And if they deprecate the Python SDK, then every Python project relying on that hardware suddenly breaks.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
By broadcasting standard JSON over a WebSocket, they transfer the parsing responsibility to the client. Any programming language that implements a standard WebSocket client can instantly ingest this data.
That makes total sense.
Right. You aren't relying on the hardware manufacturer's software support lifecycle anymore. The hardware becomes practically immortal.
And they lower the barrier even further with the server's mock mode.
Oh, the mock mode is brilliant.
Yeah, it is. Because if you want to start building a brain computer interface application today, you don't even need to buy the PyAge shield. You don't even need to attach electrodes to your head. The server can generate highly realistic synthetic EEG data.
Yeah, and the synthetic data generation is incredibly sophisticated. It
Yeah.
doesn't just, push random noise
Right,
arrays.
it's not just static.
No, not at all. The mock mode mathematically simulates real biological and hardware artifacts, like it generates baseline sensor drift.
Which is what
It
exactly?
mimics the way physical electrodes slowly polarize against the human skin over time. And it simulates distinct 10 hertz alpha rhythms. And it even injects synthetic eye blink artifacts.
Eye blinks.
Yeah, these massive voltage spikes that would normally just blow out your data scale if you weren't prepared for them.
That is so cool, allowing developers to build and test robust signal filtering algorithms before a human subject is ever even involved.
Exactly.
But firing 250 frames of JSON per second at a terminal, that isn't really actionable for a front-end developer.
No, it's just a wall of numbers.
Right. To actually build a neuro app, developers need to extract state. They need to know if the user is focused, relaxed, or interacting. So how does the PyEG server bridge that gap between raw chaotic voltage and usable developer metrics?
Well, that processing actually happens on the client side. The repository includes a browser-based dashboard running on port 1617.
Okay.
When you load that dashboard, it ingests the WebSocket stream and immediately runs a 256-point fast Fourier transform.
The FFT.
Right. And crucially, it runs this FFT locally in the browser using a web worker.
Now, offloading the FFT to a web worker, that's a vital architectural decision, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you tried to run complex signal processing on the main JavaScript thread while, like, simultaneously rendering a high-frequency UI...
The browser would just lock up instantly.
It would just freeze, yeah. Right. So the web worker processes the math in the background, keeping the visualization frame rate smooth. And the FFT takes that single chaotic time domain waveform and mathematically untangles it, right? Sorting the raw data into distinct frequency bins.
Yeah, it separates the signal into universally recognized neurological bands. So you have the slow delta waves from 0.5 to 4 hertz.
Right.
You have theta waves, alpha waves in the 8 to 13 hertz range, the active beta waves,
yeah,
and then the high-frequency gamma waves sitting between 30 and 100 hertz.
Okay.
And then the dashboard maps these frequencies onto a real-time topographic map, rendering a scalp heat map based on the standard 10-20 electrode placement montage.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, because the topographic map interpolates the data beautifully to show regional brain activity. But the documentation goes beyond just, like, visual heat maps. It introduces these pre-built client-side detectors like Use Focus and Use Relax.
Right, the custom React hooks.
Yeah, but I have to push back hard on this. Is this just pretty flashing lights for a dashboard, or do these detectors actually provide a meaningful insight into what the brain is doing, especially the use focus metric?
That's a very fair question.
Because the documentation relies heavily on calculating the ratio of fast waves, so beta and gamma, over the slow waves, alpha and theta.
Exactly, the standard ratio.
But in clinical EEG, muscle tension, like an EMG artifact from just clenching your jaw or stiffening your neck, that creates massive high-frequency noise that mimics beta and gamma waves almost perfectly.
Oh, it really does.
So how does a $30 hardware setup filter out physical muscle noise? Or does it just, you know, output false positives the second you grit your teeth?
Your skepticism is entirely warranted here. EMG artifacts are truly the bane of non-invasive brain-computer interfaces.
That's the biggest hurdle.
High-frequency muscle noise will absolutely masquerade as cortical gamma activity.
Yeah.
If it's not filtered properly. So the use focus algorithm calculates a smooth cortical engagement index, but, and this is a bit good, but it is heavily dependent on the physical placement of the electrodes and the baseline calibration of the user.
Ah, okay.
It is definitely not clinical grade diagnostics. It is an aggregate heuristic.
Yeah.
It works best when the user deliberately minimizes motor movement, establishing a clean baseline where the shift in the beta to alpha ratio reliably indicates a shift in cognitive load rather than just a shift in jaw tension.
So it's a heuristic index bounded between 0 and 1, 0 being fully relaxed, 1 being highly engaged.
Exactly.
But the software also includes a use blink hook, which seems, I mean, much less ambiguous than trying to measure cognitive focus.
Well, the use blink hook is highly reliable, mostly because it leverages the sheer physics of the human eye.
Wait, what do you mean by the physics of the eye?
Well, the eye actually acts as a massive electrical dipole.
Really?
Yeah. The cornea carries a positive charge relative to the retina.
I had no idea.
So when you blink, the eyelid sliding over the cornea creates a localized disruption in the electromagnetic field. And that registers as a massive sharp voltage spike, which is often an order of magnitude larger than your baseline brainwaves.
Wow.
And the use blink detector specifically monitors the frontal channels, FP1 and FP2, which sit directly above the eyebrows. It just runs a threshold detection algorithm on the amplitude of those specific channels to isolate the ocular dipole moment from standard background EEG noise.
Okay, so it isolates the physical artifact and just outputs a simple Boolean variable, like blink equals true.
Exactly.
Which gives developers an incredibly clean, zero-latency digital trigger, and that moves us directly into the experiences gallery.
The fun part.
The real-world applications of this data.
Mm.
Because the framework is structured so that a developer with, like, just intermediate React knowledge can wire up a new neuro experience in under 15 minutes.
Yeah, that rapid prototyping is really where the language agnostic architecture pays off. The gallery showcases an application called Spoonbend.
Oh, like the Matrix.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is essentially a digital neurofeedback loop. You have a 3D browser environment, and the application subscribes to your use focus index. The script translates your beta alpha ratio directly into the z-axis deformation of a 3D spoon mesh.
So you concentrate, the ratio spikes, and the spoon physically bends on your screen.
Exactly.
It is a brilliant immediate visualization of your own cortical engagement, which naturally trains the user to consciously control that state.
Right. It's biofeedback.
But, you know, while telekinesis is a fun tech demo, I made a pretty crucial observation looking at the gallery. Telekinesis is fun, but scrolling a browser with just eye blinks using the Blink browser, that's a massive leap for physical accessibility, isn't it?
It's huge. Decoupling computer interaction from fine motor control fundamentally changes accessibility.
Because relying on a traditional mouse or a capacitive touchscreen, I mean, that excludes individuals with severe spinal cord injuries, ALS, or other heavy motor impairments.
Right. And by utilizing the biological artifact of an eye blink, a $30 embedded system provides functional, independent web navigation. You look at the page, blink deliberately, and the viewport advances.
That's just amazing. And they also feature an application called Neural Sonification, where developers map the distinct frequency bands to MIDI parameters.
This one is so creative.
It is. Your alpha power might modulate a low-pass filter on a synthesizer drone, while transient beta bursts trigger harmonic arpeggios. You are literally actively composing music using the ambient electrical resonance of your own brain.
It's incredible.
But the architecture doesn't restrict these metrics to the local browser loop either, does it? The system is built to communicate with external environments.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the integration protocols push this from a localized desktop experiment into a full ambient computing platform.
Okay, unpack that a bit.
Well, the PyDG server includes native support for UDP OSC. That's open sound control.
Which is the protocol heavily utilized by VRChat, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And UDP is fire and forget. It lacks the handshake overhead of TCP, making it incredibly low latency.
So if a packet of brainwave data drops,
the protocol doesn't stall the stream waiting for a retransmission. It just processes the next millisecond of data.
Oh, that makes sense.
This means you can stream your live frequency bands directly to the parameters of a VRChat avatar with near zero delay. Your avatar's texture emissions or facial animations can morph dynamically based on your real-time alpha to beta ratios.
So you are basically broadcasting an unfiltered biological state into a virtual environment.
You really are. But I'd say the most robust architectural feature for external integration is the webhook system. The server can be configured to trigger HTTP POSIXT requests when specific biological thresholds are met.
Oh, wow. So you can configure the daemon to monitor your use relax index?
Yep.
And if that index sustains a value above, say, 0.8 for a continuous 60 seconds, the server fires a payload to an automation platform like Zapier or IFTTT.
Exactly. You aren't just logging data anymore. You are establishing biological state machines.
The implications for ambient computing are massive there.
Oh, completely. Imagine connecting your alpha waves to a Zapier rule.
Yeah.
You could configure a webhook that monitors a sudden, sustained drop in alpha waves, which is a classic indicator of increased stress or cognitive overload. And it automatically triggers an API call that shifts your smart home lighting to a warmer color temperature and toggles your communication apps into Do Not Disturb mode.
Okay, that is wild. Your external hardware environment begins responding automatically to your internal biological state, bypassing conscious input entirely.
It's like living in the future.
It really is. But building a system that physically connects the human body to internet-facing infrastructure, I mean, that requires a completely different class of engineering rigor. We are talking about reducing the skin's natural electrical resistance with conductive gel and practically wiring the scalp to a circuit board.
Yeah, it's not just software at that point. The engineering ethos of this project is deeply pragmatic and honestly inherently paranoid.
Which is exactly what you want in DIY bio hardware.
Absolutely. It rejects standard abstractions in favor of bare metal reliability.
So what does this all mean for the actual code base? Because I noticed a highly specific architectural choice in the source code.
Oh, the GPIO stuff.
Yes. To manage the communication between the Raspberry Pi and the hardware shield, the server uses what the developers call zero-dep GPIO, zero dependencies.
Right.
Because most embedded system tutorials rely on standard Python libraries like rpi.gpio to manage pin states, really.
Okay. Almost all of them do.
But instead, the Pi developers bypassed external libraries completely. They wrote 20 lines of raw C-style structure packing to communicate directly with the Linux character device using an ioctl system call.
Wait, straight to the kernel.
Exactly. Why intentionally ignore a massive ecosystem of helpful libraries to write raw kernel-level memory instructions? Why did they go out of their way to do that instead of just importing a standard Python library to make things easier?
Well, this raises an important question about software decay in the embedded space.
Okay.
If you rely on external Python libraries, you inherit their dependency chains. When the Linux kernel updates or Python releases a new version, those intermediary libraries often suffer breaking API changes.
And your code rots.
Exactly. Your code rots. By utilizing ioctl to talk directly to the Linux chardev interface, they're relying on a kernel application binary interface that has been stable since Linux version 4.8 in 2016.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The kernel developers treat user space ABIs as holy. They simply do not break them. So by writing close to the metal, the PyAGI developers ensure that a random package update 3 years from now won't inexplicably brick the communication layer between the Pi and the shield.
That makes total sense. It is an incredibly rugged engineering choice, perfectly designed for a home lab environment that needs to function reliably without, you know, constant maintenance.
It's very smart.
But while they bulletproof the software layer against bit rot, the documentation is brutally direct regarding physical safety.
It has to be.
It explicitly mandates that the PyAGI setup must operate exclusively from a 5-volt battery power source. It strictly forbids connecting the system to mains powered equipment via a wallwort USB charger.
The physical risks cannot be understated here. Human skin naturally possesses a high electrical impedance, often around 100,000 ohms.
Not.
When you apply conductive EEG gel and affix an electrode, you are deliberately defeating that natural biological resistor. You're dropping the impedance below 5,000 ohms just to capture those microvolt signals.
So you are creating a highly efficient conductive pathway directly to the skull.
Precisely. If you are powering the Raspberry Pi from a cheap, ungrounded wall charger, and that charger suffers an internal fault, it could dump 120 volts of mains AC power straight through the USB cable.
Oh, terrifying.
Right. With your skin impedance compromised by the gel, that current would find the path of least resistance to ground directly through the hardware and into the conductive electrodes.
Which would be catastrophic.
It would. So operating the entire system off an isolated 5-volt battery pack physically severs the connection to the electrical grid. It implements true galvanic isolation, rendering the system immune to fatal mains voltage surges.
It is a stark reminder that while JSON streams and React dashboards make the technology feel abstract and safe, the hardware is physically interfacing with human biology.
You can never forget that part.
And we see that same pragmatism applied to their network security model too, because the dashboard uses a 6-digit access PIN and relies on HMAC timing safe string comparison for verification.
The timing safe verification is a really crucial detail.
How does that work exactly?
Well, when standard software compares two passwords, it often stops checking the moment it finds an incorrect character.
Oh, so it saves time.
Right. But an attacker on the local network can measure the microsecond differences in those response times to guess the correct password character by character.
A side channel timing attack.
Exactly. But an HMAC timing safe comparison takes the exact same amount of time to process the request, regardless of whether the password is correct or incorrect. It completely neutralizes the attack vector.
But the documentation explicitly states the system lacks native TLS encryption and is completely insecure for the public internet.
Yes, and that is intentional. It is designed strictly for a trusted local area network. Exposing real-time biological telemetry to the open internet without a VPN or a reverse proxy with SSL termination is a profound security failure. The local network constraints are a feature, not a bug.
Keep your cortical voltage on your own subnet.
Exactly. Keep it local.
taking a step back and looking at the architecture as a whole, the fundamental takeaway for you, the listener, is just the sheer compression of the technology stack here.
It's unprecedented.
The barrier to entry for analyzing high-frequency biological data has evaporated. Whether you want to control a VR chat avatar with your mental state, build accessible browsing tools, or just study your own focus metrics, you no longer need a university lab. You literally just need an open-source GitHub repo, a $30 embedded computer, and a battery.
Yeah, the migration of this hardware from specialized medical facilities into the open-source developer ecosystem, It is going to force a rapid evolution in how we interact with software.
Oh, definitely.
When thousands of engineers have programmatic access to their own frequency bands, the applications will quickly outgrow simple telekinesis games.
And that reality leaves me with a thought that I honestly cannot quite shake. We explored how the webhooks integration allows developers to fire HTTP payloads based on moving averages in the use relax and use focus metrics.
Right.
Because our autonomic nervous system often reacts to stimuli before our conscious mind fully processes it, we emit stress indicating beta bursts or relaxation indicating alpha waves before we can verbally articulate our mood.
We do. Our bodies know before our brains realize it.
Exactly. If developers can now easily trigger webhooks via Zapier and IFTTT based on subconscious brain activity, we're entering an era where our physical environments react to our thoughts before we even articulate them. If your smart home knows you're stressed 30 seconds before you consciously realize it, where does the boundary of your private mind end and your external digital world begin?